Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jacob Rudner, Carlos Colosso. We are doing the annual now. We are now can say annual. We did this last year. We're doing it again now. We're on year two of doing this on YouTube. The annual Baseball America staff draft to get you ready for the 2026 MLB draft. So you may ask, what is a staff draft? So we've been doing this for a few years now, but we're doing this on the YouTube. We've done it for 2 years in a row. This is not a mock. I want to emphasize, this is not us saying, here's who we think the White Sox will pick at one, who the Royals will pick at seven. This is a draft where we, six people from the staff, line up and we kind of go in order, one through six, and then the person who picked one picks again. And we pick at that spot from who's available as we would do it, right? And sometimes people may say, this feels like a good fit for this team. But sometimes someone may take a player who you're like, that team will never select that player, but I think this player makes sense at this spot.
Right.
It's a staff draft. But we do think there's a lot of value to it for you all as well, because we're going to talk. By the way, we don't go 30 deep. We don't go 40 deep. We did a staff draft where we went 75 picks deep. So you're going to hear a lot about the players, the names, the prospects that are going to be going on day one of the draft. And if you see it, like, this is kind of, this is also useful for us to kind of go back on a year, 2 years later and kind of remember what the context of the time was. I look back at the 2024 staff draft, which we only did online. And let me just say, my team sucks. But let me just say, Carlos, you did pretty well. It's before Jacob. Carlos, you did pretty well. I will say Bart Chiarelli, who's picking again this year in this, killed it, because I believe, the most importantly, he got Connor Griffin at pick 8. So if the Angels had gotten Connor Griffin, I think they would be happier than they are now. But there's a lot to be kind of gleaned from it. And we're going to talk about all the players picked, not just the players for our teams. And so let's just dive right into it. Ben Badler had the first pick, and I'll kind of put this up where we'll see this as we pick. And Ben picked, not a big shock, but he picked Rochelowski, UCLA shortstop. I know that there are some of you listening or viewing this who have been with us all year, and you probably know a lot about Rochelowski, but there are probably some others who don't. Carlos, you've been covering Rochelowski for a very long time now. Could you just give us the thumbnail sketch of why Rochelowski would make sense at 1-1?
He's the best player in the class. He has great upside. He's been an elite college performer for 2 years. He has gold glove potential defensively at shortstop, and it's very unusual to have a college shortstop with his tool set and production in a draft overall. We think he's a unique player in that regard, and he has been the wire-to-wire number one prospect in the class for us. I know Ben views him as the clear best player in the class and thinks he also has the most upside in the class. So with Ben picking one here, this was really an unsurprising pick for him, and I still think it is probably the most likely to happen on draft day.
Jacob, I would come to you on Rock, but I'm going to do it another way, which is you had the second pick. And so with the second pick, you took Georgia Tech catcher Von Lackey. I'll start by asking, if Rock had still been on the board there, which way would it have been? I would go Rock then, if Lackey was, still on the board, but let's say Grady Emerson had gone 1-1, like, or if Von Lackey had gone 1-1, was it something where, hey, I may have taken Von Lackey even if I was picking first?
So I have taken Von Lackey first in a previous iteration of our staff draft. That being said, though, I think that the race between the top three players, Von Lackey, Grady Emerson, and Rochelowski, is close enough that I'm really torn about it. Had I had the second pick, I think I would have deeply considered taking Rock. There is an element of the staff draft where it's fun to kind of explore different options and think about each player and how I might want to evaluate them. So maybe I would have taken Rock if he was still there. For me, Von Lackey over Grady Emerson, because I am enamored with the potential of somebody like Von Lackey. I think a catcher with his level of athleticism, with his hit and power, is rare. I do think that the arm and the foundational skills behind the plate are good enough to kind of project him to still be there. And as Carlos and I have talked about pretty much since the first or second week of the college season, I do think that Von Lackey is the kind of player where if you had him at a different position, third base, somewhere in the outfield, he would still be a very high first round type prospect. So that blend at that position is exceptionally rare, and it did make it pretty easy for me to go with him. That being said, I think it's important to mention that there is really very little separation in my mind between Rock Chalowski, Von Lacky, and Grady Emerson. So it was a tough call, but I've taken Von Lacky first overall before, so it felt appropriate too.
So Carlos got to pick third. I feel like this is the way the board comes out here. This is the easiest pick of the that we're going to have here, right?
I would have taken whoever of our top three players were left on the board very happily. If I had my choice of multiple, I would have drafted in the order of our draft rankings, which is Rock Chalowski, then Grady Emerson, then Von Lacky. With Jacob picking in front of me and knowing he'd taken him in the past, I had some idea that maybe Grady Emerson would be most likely. But I think the case for Grady is potentially the best pure hit tool in this class, which is maybe rare for a high school player to be able to boast that, just given the lack of track record in college. But Grady is one of the more productive and just proven high school hitters we've seen in years. I think it's a well-rounded secondary tool set as well. I'm pretty confident that he's going to stick at shortstop and be a good defender there. We'll be curious to see what his like defensive upside and power upside are, because I do think those are two areas where both Rock and Von Lacky are a little bit more presently exciting, although Grady is the youngest of these three. And so maybe if you want to, you can dream a little bit more on that. But ultimately for me, I'm happy to get who I believe is the best pure hitter in the class here at number three.
And the three is gone. This is, as we've kind of said pretty consistently, there does seem to be a delineation. You wrote about it in the mock last week as we record this, Carlos, that like that there's a top three, and it does feel like at the top, it may be even that there's a Rock Emerson, and then maybe even a like in our BA grades as we put them out and all that, maybe there's a slight like that the Von Lacky may even be kind of in a group of his own where he's clearly above anyone else after three, but maybe there's a slight at least perception right now of a separation between the two shortstops. Is that fair?
I think it is. I mean, it's going to vary depending on the team you talk to. I think the clearest way to probably outline it is these are the top three players in the class, however you line them up. Everyone seems to agree on that. It wouldn't surprise me if there are teams who thought like Jacob and just were enamored with the catching component of Von Lacky and what he's done. I would just say those are the top three. I do think there is reasons to maybe have Rock Chalowski and Grady Emerson in a slightly different tier, but even then I wouldn't want to hammer it too hard. I think we might be getting into like the false precision territory if we do that, but those are the grades we're going to have on those players, and I think they're defensible.
So at pick four, Jeff Ponce picking selects Jackson Flora, the right-hander from UC Santa Barbara, who I'll kick this to you, Jacob. I feel like that he has kind of established himself as the absolutely clear number one pitcher, especially number one college pitcher in this class. What do you think, you know, like is what makes him the fourth pick?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are other college pitchers, just actually other pitchers in general that will go in the first round that have pretty massive upside. I think that Jackson Flora, though, comes with the least concern to some degree. It's really advanced stuff. He was statistically one of the best performing pitchers in the country at the amateur level this year. He did not win our Pitcher of the Year award, but I would say that it was very close between him and USC's Mason Edwards. The athletic ability here is really standout, and one of the things that I hear a lot when I talk to teams about Jackson Flora is just the ability to continue to develop him. There's a lot of conversation about how advanced he is, and the stuff is as loud as it is at this point, which is great. But when you have the capacity to spin the baseball, when you have the capacity to throw a changeup like he has, that has developed really in a very short period of time. It's a brand new changeup that he started throwing just for this year. And when you have the athletic ability, this is a former shortstop. If you talk to Andrew Checkitz, the head coach at UC Santa Barbara, he'll tell you any sort of race, anything that measures athleticism, like this is the guy on the team who will beat other players very consistently. And it makes it fascinating what you could potentially do with that kind of an arm in your rotation, how you can develop him, the pitches that you could add. He's kind of a lab-made specimen in there. I think that there's more development to be done. So I loved the pick. If I had the fourth overall pick, that's who I would have taken, even with a couple of really good high school bat options available right there that I would have considered strongly. I just think that the developmental runway with Jackson Flora is massive.
So I'm picking fifth. I went with Mississippi high school outfielder Eric Booth Jr. I would say if you said, who was I considering at this point, it was Booth or Lombard. Basically, it does again feel like we're trying at the top, like I think there's a value to staying pretty chalk. You know, you don't need to go crazy on this and go, oh, I really like this guy. I'm going to take him well before he's kind of considered in that grouping. Booth and Lombard, kind of, I feel like all year have been considered kind of 2 and 3 or 3 and 2, to, you know, however you want to line them up as the next best prep position players, prep players in this class behind Emerson. Booth is someone who I do think, you know, again, it's a very small part of it, but looking at it, it's like, hey, the Pirates had a lot of success with a Mississippi prep a couple of years ago. And they, again, I'm not looking for need or anything like this, but the value of this is this is a very appropriate pick value wise. He also fits, like, if they could have a dynamic outfielder to go with what they already have with this team, if they could hit a home run on Eric Booth Jr., that would be it. That would add further. Although obviously I do think that Eric Booth Jr., I'm not going to put anyone that they're going to be on the Connor Griffin plan where you say, hey, you draft a guy and 2 years later, he's in the big leagues. That's asking a lot of high school guys and it doesn't happen very often, but that gets us to pick. So we get to pick 6 with the Royals. I think I said 7 earlier when I was talking. That was stupid on me. But Mark Chiarelli, who, like we said, had a great draft last year for the final staff draft. But Mark Chiarelli, 2 years ago, picks Tyler Bell, the Kentucky shortstop. Carlos, I feel like that Bell is the guy who kind of, there are a couple of these we'll talk about in the draft, but Bell, who missed the part of the start of the season with injury, came back for Kentucky, had a very solid year. A lot of, you know, really, I would say an OBP-driven, very strong year for Kentucky. He's got kind of more of a range of variance here of where he could go in the actual draft than I think a lot of the other guys we're talking about at the top of this class.
Right. We view a clear top 6 players at the top of the class. Mark made the first pick that takes a player out of that tier when he didn't have to. We'll get into maybe why that is when we get to our 6th player and Jacob Lombard when he comes off the board. But I do think Tyler Bell is talked about as like one of the most common options after this group of 6 is mentioned on draft day. I think there is a perception of a lot of safety with Tyler Bell's profile. He does not have the same sort of upside that these top high school hitters who are going around him do. I think it's maybe a well-rounded, solid average-ish tool set across the board. There might not be a single plus tool that Tyler Bell has, but he's a switch hitter. He's a college shortstop who projects to stick there and play a solid defense at the position. He has a great batting eye. And I think the questions are going to be, do you really value the batting eye that comes from what was a very passive approach, as you kind of alluded to there? Like, he did not swing a lot. I think there are some questions about how that approach is going to translate. And then also just how much power are you getting with Tyler Bell? That's kind of been a question for him for a few years now. He's a leaner player. He's not the most physical. He doesn't hit the ball maybe as hard as you would want. But I do think this is a very well-rounded, proven, safe sort of college profile.
So then that gets us to 7. Speaking of, so then Jacob Lombard, the shortstop from Gulliver Prep High in Miami, goes off the board. This is the, what we said, the 6th of the top. If we said that there's that first tier, then there's this kind of tier after it that I feel like is kind of Flora, Booth, and Lombard. And again, the order of that can very much be eye of beholder, which kind of profile you prefer. But Carlos, going back to Lombard, he's been, as we've said, kind of all through this year, kind of considered in this top tier. Not surprised at all. I would have been shocked if Ben had not taken Lombard at this point.
Yep.
But he's kind of more, there's kind of some mirror images of him. He's the reverse. Like, if you say with Emerson that it's the bat that is exceptional and then the rest of it's good, but not
right.
That Lombard's more of like the defense, the athleticism is.
I think Jacob Lombard has maybe the most exciting pure upside in this class. If you could say you're going to get a 60 hitter with everyone who would be the best player, it might be Jacob Lombard because he is a dynamic defender at shortstop. He has a plus arm. He has plus raw power. He's a plus or better runner. It's pluses across the board with him. He just does have very concerning swing and miss track record. The contact skills are questionable. JJ, we got into this in a podcast a few weeks ago on the draft podcast, just with the rate of miss he showed on the circuit last summer really does lump him into iffy profiles who have struggled to make enough contact in pro ball. So I think of the players in the top 6, Jacob Lombard maybe will have the most polarizing and the widest range of outcomes actually on draft day. I don't expect any of these players in the top 6 to actually slide, but if someone does, and it is Jacob Lombard, we will know why, and it is because of the missed questions. With that said, it's a home run swing you're taking here. by drafting Jacob Lombard, because if he pans out, if he makes some adjustments, he is an athlete who maybe you look at and say, okay, he can make the adjustments necessary. You could be getting a really impact player with Jacob Lombard.
So we get to then pick 8. And Jacob decided to break my heart, because as everyone knows in this podcast, I am a Drew Burrows fan. And Jacob takes him pick 8 to the A's. Jacob, why did you have to do that to me, man?
You know, I actually think, and you guys can feel free to disagree, but once you get outside of that top 6, and I know that it's at 8 in this draft because Tyler Bell went inside the top 8, but it really gets murky. Like, there are a lot of guys who have a lot of problems, and I think that over the course of the season, I have gotten to a place with Drew Burris where I feel like he's actually pretty reliable for the range that we're starting to get into. He is a fantastic fastball hitter. He does a great job against velocity. He is a reasonably aggressive hitter. This is not somebody who goes to the plate afraid to swing, but he does not chase very much. It's good swing decisions. I think that the contact ability against spin is probably where you get a little bit more questionable. But even there, when you're putting spin in the zone against him, you're not beating him. It's more of a chase component when you throw spin to Drew Burris. I just think that, and yes, like, he is undersized. There are questions about what it's going to look like when you put wood in his hands. He has been a very good metal bat hitter and not a very impressive wood bat hitter for now a couple of years. But I think when you bring in somebody with that foundational level of swing decisions, athletic ability, proven track record in college, it feels like a pretty sure thing. And we're also talking about picking him versus guys who do have major swing and miss concerns or major defensive concerns. Like, I'm not worried about Drew Burris being able to stick in center field. I think he's got that in the bag. I'm not really worried about Drew Burris going into pro ball with the requisite swing decisions to be able to have the foundation to be successful. I think he has the requisite strength to be very successful. It's just now a question of whether or not some of the things that he does super well in college are going to translate to the wood bat scenario. Obviously, the pitching gets better, but like, a lot of the underlying marker skills that you're looking for, I think Drew Burris has most of them. And it's easy for me to overlook some of the things like the height and the lack of wood bat performance, especially when you compare him to some of the other options in this range. And I felt pretty great about that pick, actually.
The best player, if you said who's been the most productive college player over the last 3 years, if you put all 3 years together, it's Drew Burris, largely because that freshman year is one of the great seasons you'll ever see from a freshman. But Carlos, you, on the other hand, mine is gone. You get Derek Curiel, who I think you've gotten in pretty much every staff draft we've had.
There are a couple players who I've gotten in every staff draft. I don't think Derek Curiel is actually one of them. I think Mark jumped him for me in one early draft. But very happy to take Derek Curiel here. I do think he's in this next mix of players where it gets really muddled. Like Jacob said, I think when you're in this range, it really is dependent on like what you prioritize, the weaknesses that you feel more okay with. For me, I have always been drawn to Derek Curiel's pure hitting ability. I think there may be two players in front of him that I think have better pure hit tools. And with that, I'm like giving Rock Chulowski the benefit of the doubt there. I think I would still take Derek Curiel if you're looking at just pure hit tool. His track record goes back to his freshman year of high school in Southern California with a really good team. It's a center field profile. I view Derek Curiel's ability to stick in center field basically identical to what Jacob was saying with how he's viewing Drew Burris. I think these are two like non-typical center fielders in that they don't have 70 grade speed, but they are both very instinctual and know how to run routes and just play the position very well. The questions with Derek Curiel are obviously how much power are you going to get to? And that is a question. I like this pick, even acknowledging that like he's probably getting to 40 power at best game power. And I'd be very happy with that outcome. I think if you're getting a regular contributor at the major league level in the first round in this range here, I think that's a great outcome. I don't think Derek Curiel is the sort of perennial all-star upside player. I think we're already beyond that group of players in the class. And so for me, the safety and the polish of his hit tool and his defense is really appealing. I would take him as high as 5th overall in this draft over some of the more questionable players who have bigger tools in front of him.
We are through the single digits. We are now up to pick 10, and we will talk about what the Rockies are taking in this staff draft right after this quick break.
Hey, for the families out there looking for a different path to help your child succeed at home, look into K-12 powered schools. Todd, Father, you've done the homeschooling thing in the past. I know you liked it.
Yeah, I did. I liked it a lot. All my kids have done it before. It's an opportunity for them to stay at home and enjoy school just as much. They learn a lot. And this is an opportunity for families that are on the go too as well. They have to understand, listen, can't be at a regular school at all times. I need my child to be doing this, whether it's an athletic career or whatever stature they are at. And we loved every second of it. I think it is an easy opportunity for some children.
K-12 offers tuition-free accredited online public education for students in K through 12, all in a setting that works for your family. See how K-12 powered schools can help unlock your child's full potential. Enroll today at k12.com/FOUL. That's the letter K, the number 12.com/FOUL. K12.com/FOUL.
So, at pick 10, the Rockies, Jeff Ponce selecting for them. Jared Greinlinger, the outfielder, I will note here, of Huntington Beach High. So, Carlos, we are now, like Jacob said, we are in the range where a lot of different outcomes. I think you can very much make a case, especially with now that Burris and Curiel are off the board, who are kind of more of the long-term track record hit tool guy, college guys. You can go a lot of different ways here. What is it about Greinlinger here that kind of stands out?
Greinlinger is exceptionally young for the class. He was originally a 2027 eligible player who reclassified. So he'll be 17 at the draft. He also has really impeccable bat-to-ball skills. He barely missed at all on the circuit last summer. He's a legitimate two-way player. Interesting to see that Jeff drafted him here as a hitter only. I'm assuming he prefers him as a hitter. I actually like him better as a pitcher. I know there are some teams who are maybe less model oriented who do prefer him as a pitcher. He's a left-handed pitcher with a chance for above average pitch mix across the board. But it does seem like the highest teams on him in the industry like him because they think the pure hitting ability is just innate and natural. And they look at the frame and you're looking at a player who's, we have him listed as 6'3", 185 pounds. As he gets to physical maturity, you can dream on a lot more power coming. And I think you're going to need to for him to profile as a bat because he is likely to be a corner player in some capacity, whether that's left or right field, whether that's first base. But this does start to be the range where his name starts to get a little bit of steam.
So I'm picking 11th for the Nationals, and I picked Ace Reese third base, and I'll put third base in quotes there because I think he probably ends up at first base at the end of the day. But you could put hitter in the position there because that's really why you're taking Ace Reese here for Mississippi State. Again, when we get to this point, there are definitely different ways you could go. The reason I'm going Ace Reese here is I just feel really, really confident about his ability to hit for average and power. I don't think he's going to play third base in the long run. I think that kind of like what the Brewers have done with Andrew Fisher, you send him out there and then pretty quickly as he moves up the ladder, I would expect he'd be a relatively quick mover at some point pretty quickly. You're probably going to slide him over and say, okay, your job here is to hit. Your job here is to mash. And we think you can make it pretty quickly. There's just a really a good confidence, I would say, in the hit tool. He's performed. He's done so against top-notch competition. I just feel like that makes a whole lot of sense there. And anyone else want to add on Reese before I go to pick 12?
I'm curious if you considered anyone else here, if it was definitely Reese for you once Jacob broke your heart and took Burris a few picks in front.
I mean, there are definitely, you could say, like, there's a wide array of ways you could go. I would say that, like, we're going to hit several of those players coming up. Like, I would say that, like, I thought about Chris Hakopian, who I think I've taken before in a staff draft, who I think also is a really good hitter.
Right.
More defensive ability, but at the same time, a little bit less. I mean, not much. I mean, it's like, I would say he has a slightly better chance of playing second base than Reese has of playing third. I don't think either of them are going to be able to do that.
Right.
But,
So you were in the bat mode, sounds like.
But I would say that at the same time, the guy who's going to go 12 here also was in consideration, which is Gio Rojas, the left-hander from Stoneman Douglas High, a program that they've produced a few big leaguers over the years.
Decent track record of winning as well. Yeah, Gio Rojas is like, I think, not to the same degree as Jackson Flora on the college side, but he is the top-ranked high school pitcher in the class. And I think given how some of the high school pitchers finished this season, there's maybe a little bit more separation now as we approach draft day. But Gio Rojas has electric arm speed from the left side. He's got a fastball that looks like it should be a plus pitch with a lot of life. He's got a high-spin breaking ball. in the low 80s. He's shown multiple pitch shapes with that. Sometimes it looks like more of a curve. He's shown like an upper 80s variant that looks like more of a cutter at times. It's mostly fastball slider right now, but I think there are the makings of a changeup that will potentially be more of a factor for him moving forward. But he really stands out to me for just how dynamic of a mover he is on the mound, and he dominated this spring against really quality competition. So Mark going for the upside prep pitching pick.
So, and then Ben picking and Ben going to the college route, which, but again, when, if Ben's going to go to the college route for a position player, I'm generally going to feel pretty good about their hit tool that kind of fits in the Ben package. But, AJ Gracia, the outfielder from Virginia, who's been considered a likely first rounder, you know, kind of like going on for quite a while. Jacob, what would the Cardinals be getting if they picked AJ Gracia here?
Yeah, I mean, there's a no doubt feel for contact. He's got great bat to ball. There's strength here. I think that the questions for AJ Gracia come down to A, where is it that he ends up defensively? In my opinion, it's no doubt corner profile in the outfield. And the second biggest thing is that I think that there is a major passivity question. AJ Gracia does not do a whole lot of swinging at pitches that are in the heart of the plate. He is extremely selective. His go zone is very small. That being said, when he does go, the results tend to be pretty good. I think that he is somebody who will have at least average game power if he's able to swing enough. I think that this is somebody who is an above average hitter, just from a pure hit tool standpoint. I would have some fears about the defensive positioning and just whether or not the power will materialize and whether or not you can actually get this guy to be a little bit more aggressive. But in terms of like ceiling outcomes, I do think that AJ Gracia is one of the best hitters in this class. It's just a matter of how much you can actually pull that out of him.
Here's my interesting fun fact for AJ Gracia. For a guy who looks like he does and has the raw power that he does and has hit 14 or more home runs each season of his college career, Derek Curiel actually hit the ball harder than him in terms of exit velocities, average 90th percentile. That one always shocks me. I still think AJ Gracia should be a more productive power hitter with wood at the next level than Curiel, but that number always trips me up a little bit with him.
I think that AJ Gracia is one of the, because of what Carlos just said, I think that AJ Gracia is one of the scarier picks in this range, because the other thing that I think is important is what Carlos said earlier, which is that if you're taking Drew Burris or you're taking Derek Curiel, you feel pretty good, maybe not great, about the fact that those two guys are going to stick in center field. I don't think that AJ Gracia has a chance to play center field as a professional player. This is more of a no-doubt corner situation. And so it's a better depiction of what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago, which is that this is a range of college and high school players where there's some real upside, and there are some guys who have done some really impressive things at their respective levels over the last couple of years. But there are very obvious problems to point out, I think, with pretty much everybody that you're going to take from here on out.
Yeah.
I would ask, okay, again, like I have a little bit of memory of Adam Haseley, another Virginia outfielder who left-handed hitting outfielder. I think a little bit, not as tall, but pretty similar build and all like that. Again, like, and had a pretty similar season. Like I think they each had 14 homers in their draft year. So I'll just kind of throw that out that I'm a little, you know, again, there's some, yeah, I'm kind of with you on kind of what you're saying there. But Jacob, you take, okay, you were like, I'm going to belly up to the risk, the risk reward, with my pick, you know, with your pick, the Marlins pick of Liam Peterson, the right-hander from Florida, who shows great stuff and has at times, it's a little erratic right now, isn't it?
It sure is, and there's no denying it. I think that this is one of the riskier picks that we have in the top 15 that anybody made, right alongside Ben with AJ Gracia and Jeff with Jared Greinlinger, just depending on how that's going to all unfold. But I kind of have put on my tinfoil cap a little bit when it comes to Liam Peterson. I have some theories. I think that the developmental arc for Liam Peterson has been challenging. I think that the situation at Florida, just even going into his draft year, Kevin O'Sullivan misses some time due to, you know, personal reasons. He steps away from the program. I don't know that those two have always seen eye to eye. I've heard that he and former Florida pitching coach David Kopp have very much not seen eye to eye, and it's caused a little bit of a rift between them. And it makes me wonder, if somebody with that kind of stuff, because I actually don't think that the stuff is worse than very many people in this class, if any. I think that the pure arsenal could be the best in the 2026 class. It's just never really been optimized. Like I did a study going into the year about Liam Peterson and which of his starts were the most successful. Without fail, it was when he was using his curveball. His highest usage curveball outings were his best starts, period, every single time. He threw his curveball over the course of his career, I think, about 6% of the time. This is a very north-south pitcher. He's very unique in terms of how he throws the baseball. And it makes me wonder if a professional team is going to come in and look at this guy and just radically change the way that he's doing things, the usage. I think that there's room to install some sort of two-seam fastball that runs in on right-handed batters in the same way that Hurston Waldrop was able to do that for the Braves, another very high-handed former Florida product who had a rough start as a major leaguer and has since kind of really figured things out. He credits a lot of that success to the addition of a two-seam fastball. Liam Peterson sought out Waldrop before the 2026 season, and he asked him, what is it that helps you? Why is this such a good thing for your arsenal? How do you employ it? And he tried to do it. So I think this is somebody who's motivated to improve. I think that that's really important when it comes to the baseball draft more than any other professional league. And I do think that there are a lot of boxes that remained unchecked developmentally with Liam Peterson, that if it works out, he could be the biggest boom in this class. So I'm taking the home run swing. Is there a massive fizzle out outcome here? For sure. We've all seen it over the last couple of years in his college starts. But again, I think that if you can really iron this stuff out and get him right, it's the sky's the limit. He's fantastic if it's great.
So, Carlos, at pick 15, I'm a fan of this pick. You took Ryder Helfrich.
I'm a fan of it, too.
So, tell us what you like about Helfrich at pick 15.
I mean, he ranked number 7 on the board, and I'm getting him here at 15. I think that speaks to kind of how big this tier is. All the players that went in front of him, I think, make sense. I don't think anyone, like, really jumped off the board at a crazy level. But I was considering Ryder Helfrich with my pick at 9. I think Derek Curiel, Drew Burris, and Ryder Helfrich were kind of the guys I was sizing up there. For some of the reasons Jacob mentioned previously, I like the fact that he's an up-the-middle player. So even if there are some real hit-risk questions with Ryder Helfrich, I feel good about his ability to create value as a defender at catcher. I think he'll be an above-average defender there with some more polish. I think metrically he already grades out pretty well behind the plate. He's got a plus arm. He's got plus raw power. So the idea of getting a power hitting catcher at 15 is pretty exciting to me. And just based on how this draft unfolded, I didn't really consider many other players at this pick. I think he was pretty clearly my top ranked player available here.
So at pick 16 for the Rangers, Jeff selected Trevor Condon, the high school outfielder from Etowah High in Woodstock, Georgia. I'll go back to you, Carlos, on this one. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Trevor Condon going in this range?
Yeah, I actually like this pick better than Jeff's previous one. I do think Trevor Condon and Jared Greinling are kind of the next two high school players high school hitters, I should say, on the board after our top three come off. I just feel more confident in what Trevor Condon can do as a hitter. In a myriad of ways. Defensively, I think he's going to stick in center field. He's a double plus runner. He gets out of the box extremely rapidly. He has an endearing hair on fire play style. He makes a ton of contact. I think he's also incorporated his lower half a little bit more this spring and maybe surprised some people with the impact that he's shown. I don't think he's going to be a big slugger, but I don't think he's going to be an empty batting average player either. In some ways, there's like an added speed profile to like a Derek Curiel. I think if you like Derek Curiel's profile, Trevor Condon does a lot of the same things and you can maybe dream on a little bit more with him. I think this is a really fun pick. And Trevor Condon, whoever watches him play, if you haven't seen him, when you do, it's very hard to go in and watch Trevor Condon play a baseball game and not just be excited about anything he's doing on the field.
So Jacob, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I have seen Trevor Condon play a couple times in person. I think that there's an interesting subplot to the Trevor Condon pick that will be relevant a couple of times in the first few rounds with some high school players. And that is that this is a draft that has a lot of weird swings. And when I say weird swings, I mean some of the swings are weird, but in Condon's case, the timing mechanism is very unorthodox. And I know that there are some teams that look at him and they're like, I don't know if that's going to work out as a professional. One high-level evaluator pointed out to me that this draft, if you go back through it, maybe one of the most full of just weird hitters that we've seen in a long time from the high school level. There are a lot of dudes who will either need to have their weird ways work out for them or make some pretty big changes in order for things to work out. And I think that Condon is the best of that group. So in Jeff's pick, you're getting somebody who, like Carlos said, is an electric athlete, an electric player just in terms of style. But one interesting thing to keep an eye on is exactly how that swing progresses, how a team looks at the timing mechanism and whether or not they want to change it. And then, of course, there are some guys behind him who I think will fall into a similar bucket. So that's one thing that I will be keeping an eye on in this draft, who takes who, and for the next couple of years as well, because that's always an interesting thing.
So with my pick for the Astros at 17, I talked about him before, Chris Akopian, the second baseman for Texas A&M. You could say infielder. You could say, again, hitter. He has played shortstop at Maryland. He played third base. The thing I will say about Akopian, who doesn't have the power potential, I would say, as some of these other guys we, he's got some, but he's not ever had the same kind of productive power. He's never hit 20 homers in a college season, but he's always hit for average wherever he's gone. And one thing that I also like about this, he has a pretty extensive wood bat track record. We're now in an era where a whole lot of the top guys don't really do a lot in the summer. In Hakopian's case, he had a full summer in the Cape last year where he hit pretty well. He had a full cut, he had a full summer before that in the NABCL that where he also played very well and even played a couple of games coming out of his high school season. So we've seen a lot of wood bat track record with him. Mm-hmm. To me, in an era where that is kind of a little bit less common, I think that really kind of makes me feel a little bit better, especially we're at pick 17. We're talking about a pretty polished, a pretty consistent bat with some defensive questions, and has also missed a little bit of time this year. Yeah. Some concerns about long-term durability maybe as well.
Chris Akopian maybe is the best hit-power combination in this class, and if he's not, you maybe took the other one in Ace Reese at 11. I think those are two of the – and what you're giving up in getting those hit-power combinations is some more defensive profile questions. But typically in this class, if you're getting a hitter who makes a ton of contact, you're not getting a lot of power. Chris Akopian is one of the players who actually does impact the ball pretty well while making a ton of contact. His pure contact and end zone contact rates stack up with really the best pure hitters we're going to talk about in this staff draft. And so that is what you're buying with Hakopian, just a really good operation in the box where he settles defensively and how much he can move around. That is going to be a big question.
You might have just drafted two first basemen to get to it though.
I'm betting on bats. Okay. Pick 18, Mark for the Reds selected. An interesting pick, but apparently they hit copy paste. Okay, there. Cameron Flukey, right-hander for Coastal Carolina. Carlos, we've talked to feel like I'm about Flukey a lot on the draft pod this year. I would say coming out of last year, coming out of last summer and College World Series, you would never have imagined that Flukey could last to 18. Why is he still on the board here at 18?
Yeah, I think there are some questions just with durability, with injury, with delivery. Although delivery questions aren't new, I think maybe just some of the injuries he's dealt with have maybe just added some more uncertainty to how he does it on the mound. Cameron Flukey dealt with a rib strain this year that limited him pretty significantly in terms of the workload that he was able to get to. He had some abbreviated outings down the stretch. And the good thing is Cameron Flukey's stuff looked the same as it's always looked for him. And I do think Cameron Flukey has one of the better, more impressive starter track records. He throws a lot of strikes. He has a great fastball with a lot of riding life. He's got multiple breaking balls with a distinct shape that he's really confident in. I think the questions with Flukey are, is that delivery going to limit him from a durability perspective at the next level? Are the injuries he's dealt with, and it's not just the rib injury he's had this year, he's had other injuries in the past as well. How much will that limit him? And I think for me, like, I would like to see more of a changeup for Cameron Flukey. He doesn't really throw one as much. Jacob mentioned Jackson Flora basically breaking out a new changeup this year that really elevated his profile. Cameron Flukey didn't have the same limited arsenal questions that Flora did entering the year. But that is a question that I have for him, despite the fact that I still really like the fastball, the curveball, and the slider. And when he's been on the mound, he's been very effective. So I think there's a lot of confidence in the command in the fastball here with Flukey.
Pick 19 for the Guardians. Ben Badler selects Tyler Spangler, shortstop from De La Salle High School, Concord, California. Carlos, coming back to you, Spangler, just kind of lay out, like, I feel like he's a guy who coming into the year we thought might go a little bit higher than that. Is that?
Yeah, seeing Cameron Flukie and Tyler Spengler back to back is interesting because a lot of the reasons why they've been slipping is just they haven't been on the field much. Tyler Spengler didn't play this spring for De La Salle. We saw him at the combine on the field. I think entering the year, we viewed him as a potential top three high school player in the class alongside Grady Emerson and Jacob Lombard. I know Ben has been a huge fan of Spengler for a long time. He is a very advanced pure hitter. It is the sort of Grady Emerson package in that you're buying a really advanced approach at the plate, a left-handed swing you feel good about, and it's a well-rounded tool set. Beyond that, you're still going to need to project and dream on some more power coming. I think there may be slightly more questions about whether he's a shortstop or third baseman, but he does have solid actions in defensive work. There's just a lot of uncertainty with Spengler now. Given the fact that he didn't play this spring, he also has a Stanford commitment, which we've seen in the past that comes into play in terms of signability. But in terms of like pure hitting ability, Tyler Spengler would be near the top of this class.
We are through 19 picks. We will roll on to pick 20 right after this quick break. And we're back. And Jacob, you are picking for the Red Sox at pick 20. And you took Tennessee right-hander Tegan Coons, who is one of the guys that had a little bit more helium, I'd say, this spring. What jumped out about Coons to you?
Yeah, I think you're getting a really premium bucket of potential here. The arsenal is already very good, specifically that fastball. The shape on that pitch is outstanding. He has great angles. Not necessarily like the best mover in the class in terms of getting down the mound and in the extension category, but just the attack angle on the fastball, the way that it moves is impressive. It's up to 99. And then he has real feel for spin. There's a good curveball and slider in there. He does throw a changeup that had a 35% miss rate in the regular season. It's got, you know, really good life on it and separation from the fastball. And then more than anything with Tegan Coons, I think he's ultra projectable. He's still super thin. This is a very small pitcher. I think that you can easily envision him having, you know, 15 to 25 pounds on that frame and getting even stronger and more durable. And if you do that with the foundation that he has, this guy is kind of the limit here. I actually considered him at 14 when I took Liam Peterson.
Cool. We get to pick 21 with Carlos, and Carlos selects TCU outfielder Sawyer Strohsnyder. Carlos, I feel like that this is a risk-reward pick.
This is, and I think this is the first player that I actually have gotten in all four of our staff drafts. I think I'm maybe the highest on Sawyer Strohsnyder in our office. This is definitely a tools and athleticism pick. It's kind of the antithesis of my Derek Curiel pick, 10 spots in front of this. I think Sawyer Strohsnyder maybe has four plus tools with his raw power, his speed, his defensive upside, and his arm strength. And I'm also less concerned about him hitting under 300 this spring than I typically would be, partially because he had a tremendous freshman season in 2025 with TCU, partially just because I buy into some of the approach changes he made this spring. He walked at double the rate that he did a year ago. There still are some chase questions and some swing decision questions he's going to need to continue improving. But if he can just tighten those up a little bit, I do think that Sawyer Strohsnyder has really impactful upside as this power speed, either good center fielder or maybe great corner outfielder if he has to move in the future. So it's definitely an upside play for me here.
So that puts us on to 22 pick. The Tigers, Jeff Ponce selects Taylor Rabe, the Ole Miss right-hander who, if we just said a Ole Miss right-hander goes in the early 20s, Jacob, coming into the year, we'd had a different name there, but I would say that we're going to hear another Ole Miss pitcher, I think, before too long. But at the same time, Taylor Rabe kind of had a very strong finishing kick to the season, did he not?
He sure did, and I think that this was the guy that I was really, really hoping would get to 26. I absolutely considered him at 20 when I went with Tegan Coons. The fear here is that he does not have the same kind of spin capacity as a guy like Tegan Coons, which is what led me to make my pick. That being said, I do think that Taylor Rabe is a real high upside play. He's a 6'6" righty. He's got a starter's frame. He's very new still to everything that he's doing. The entire operation has changed dramatically over the course of the year. I will shamelessly plug a story that I wrote over at Baseball America from the College World Series, kind of detailing some of those changes. His arm slot has come up significantly. He has revamped the way that he gets into his delivery, the way that he gets down the mound, and then the way that he throws his fastball. That cutter is really, really good. So you're drafting a premium fastball package a really good mover, and somebody who is still very raw in everything that he's doing. So I think that there's kind of capacity to get a lot better in some of these things. And the lack of feel for spin, part of me wonders if that's, again, just goes back to the newness, and maybe somebody gets him into their developmental system and starts to kind of install those things successfully. So I think it's a great pick, and I very much considered him earlier and wish that he was there a couple picks down the line.
So that gets on to me at pick 23 with the Cubs. And I love how Carlos said, like, he picked Strohsnyder and Curiel are kind of very different types, and he picked both of them. Mason Edwards is not my normal type, I will say. You know,
a little run of college arms here.
You know, but Mason Edwards was our college pitcher of the year, dominating season for Southern Cal this year. I would say with him, you are talking about, like, he has a demonstrated ability to miss bats. We've seen that, you know, and I would say, I even though I made the pick, you've seen him more in person than I have, Jacob. So, like, with Mason Edwards, what is it that makes him so effective? Despite, like, if you just look at the pure stuff, there are definitely guys who are going, they're going to go after him who, you know, who may light up the radar gun a little bit more. What is it about Mason Edwards?
Well, it's the spin. For him, that breaking ball is the main piece here. I think that he has a really great feel for his breaking ball. Some scouts believe that it's two different pitches, a fastball and a curveball. I talked to Mason Edwards earlier in the year, as well as his former pitching coach, Sean Allen. It actually sounds like it's one pitch that he just kind of manipulates into different shapes. He just throws it somewhat differently. He has the ability to manipulate his arm slot, which is something that I love in some of these lack of velocity left-handers. The fastball is light. But I do think that this is a guy who really has a feel for pitching. The off speeds are very advanced, and it's just kind of a matter of whether or not you're going to be able to get to a little bit more velocity fastball wise. And then, of course, in order to avoid a relief outcome, I do think that the control will have to tick up massively when he gets into pro ball.
So that puts us on to pick 24 with the Mariners, and the Mariners take Zion Rose, Louisville outfielder, who missed, again, something we talked about before, you know, another guy who missed the start of the season and then made up pretty well for lost time, Carlos, when he did come back.
Yeah, I was curious to see which college outfielder would be kind of the first after we cleared this college outfield group that for us ended with Sawyer Strohsnyder and AJ Grassi. I think there's a little bit of a gap between whoever the next names are. It seems like Mark really was excited about Zion Rose's contact ability compared to some of the other options here. He's a right-handed hitter. He's also a corner outfielder now, but I know there are some scouts who look at just his raw running ability. He's a plus or maybe even better runner, who has a chance to play center field. He just happens to share the same outfield with one of the better defenders in the entire country and Lucas Moore. But Zion Rose was a tremendous performer when he came back from his injury. He makes a lot of contact. I think he hits the ball hard. He doesn't lift the ball a ton. So those are going to be some of the questions for him moving forward. How much does he impact the ball and get it in the air? And like, what does the defensive profile look like? Because I think you're going to need to see some route running improvement from him, no matter where he's at in the outfield. But it's a solid collection of contact skills and physical tools here with Zion Rose.
As we say, this is a staff draft. We're not always picking for what the team fit and all that. But at the same time, the Brewers taking a good glove shortstop in Aiden Ruiz, Ben's pick. For the Brewers, that kind of seems like there's a nice meld there of what the organization likes and what Ben picks for them. Not a surprise to see Ben pick Aiden Ruiz there. Carlos Ruiz, he kind of can make a comparison. Like when you talk about him and Lombard, those are kind of are those the best gloves, shortstop gloves in the class?
I would throw Chalowski into that mix, but if you want to just say high school players, yeah, I think these are the top two, and I think most scouts would tell you that Aiden Ruiz is the top defender in the high school class at shortstop. He's impeccable with how he moves at the position. His hands are ultra reliable. He makes every routine play. He makes a number of impact highlight reel plays. His instincts are tremendous. His range is impressive. He doesn't have the best arm in the world, but his ability to get the ball in and out of the glove makes up for that, I think. I've talked to some scouts who wonder if he slides to second because of the arm, which is a little bit unusual for a player you're talking about as the best defensive shortstop in the class. Ultimately, I think he does enough from the arm strength perspective to make it work there. The instincts are just tremendous. And then he also has solid contact skills and has gotten a little bit stronger this spring. So he has been a Ben Badler favorite for a long time now. I don't know if we've had a single staff draft where Ben hasn't taken him. So
Jacob, on the other hand, takes a guy who I don't think had gone this high in any of the previous staff drafts. Jaren Avicula, Georgia Tech had, we've talked about, a great year. But if you talk about from a pure hitting ability standpoint, Jaren Avicula had the best year of any of that Yellow Jackets group, even more than Von Lackey, even more than Drew Burris. Jacob, what are you getting? What are the Braves getting in this scenario with Jaron Avicula?
Well, you kind of just outlined it perfectly, and it's the hit tool. This pick is entirely motivated by the fact that I think that Jaron Avicula has one of the best hit tools in this class, and I think that at pick 26, that is great value to be getting. I will admit that I think that my preferred picks were the guys that went just narrowly in front of me in Taylor Wade, Mason Edwards, and Zion Rose. And then after that, I do think that there is a little bit of a tier break. It's a softer tier break than the one that we talked about after the top six into that like 7 through 25 range. But I think that it happens again a little bit here where you can go in a number of different directions. Advíncula, great hitter. It's well below average power. I think the defensive ability at second base is just fine. But again, you're really hoping to get somebody who's just going to be an on-base machine with a great feel for contact. And that was what I was targeting here.
So Carlos, you get to pick for the Mets here at pick 27. And one of the most prominent names I would think that we've talked about more than about anybody goes off the board. Justin LeBron, Alabama shortstop. I would say if the Mets got him at 27, this has got a wide range of where Justin LeBron could go. But if I'm a Mets fan and he ends up lasting till 27, I think the risk reward payoff here becomes pretty strongly slanted towards reward.
Yeah, that you explained my thought process exactly. I didn't come into the staff draft being like, oh man, I really want to get Justin LeBron, because I do have some real questions about just the pure hitting ability we've seen for multiple years now, and inability to react to and recognize spin in a way that I think could be really prohibitive for his ability to get to his loud raw power at the next level. But at the same time, at 27, his athleticism and tool set is leaps and bounds better than anyone else that I can see on the board here. And like you said, at 27, the risk, I'm more than happy to take a chance on Justin LeBron's upside, because if he improves and if he hits, he has like franchise changing tools and upside. When you see Justin LeBron on the right day, he looks like he should be a top five pick in this class. He's a dynamic runner. I'm very bullish on him defensively. Actually, I know he had an error-prone defensive season. I think we've seen both in pro ball and at the amateur level, talented defenders can struggle with errors. He's too good of an athlete and too good of a mover in the field for me to not think that can improve with pro instruction. I think defense is maybe the best area for player development to improve players at the next level. So I'm confident in that part of his game. A lot less confident in the hit tool, but again, at 27, I'm happy with the risk reward.
28, Astros pick. Jeff selects Logan Redman, UCLA right-hander. Jacob, I feel like if Logan Redman had been healthy all year, he probably is off the board before this. But importantly, we did see him get on the mound, I believe, in the combine, which is important. But if Logan Redman's healthy, what would the Astros be getting here at pick 28?
Yeah, I think you're getting one of the better pitchability guys, and I say that, and I think that comes with the connotation of the stuff is light, but I think that you're getting one of the best pitchability guys in the draft in Logan Redman if he can stay healthy, and it comes with pretty loud stuff. It's a mid to high 90s fastball. I actually saw him touch 99 in person multiple times when he faced off against USC. There is a good slider in there, and the piece de resistance is the changeup. It's a really good pitch. There are multiple evaluators who think it's presently plus. There are some others who fall into the bucket more of it's at least average right now, and it can be plus one day. But regardless, this is somebody who is a very good feel for being around the strike zone. And again, I think that he does have the kind of stuff that when you combine it with that pitchability, you could really kind of dream on it pretty easily. The question now is just whether or not he's going to be healthy.
So then that comes to me. And this is now I get one of my cheese balls from this class, which is Cole Prosek. Position here again, I'm taking like this, but this is unlike my Ace Reese pick, unlike my Chris Akopian pick, there's some upside to this defense, which is Cole Prosek, primarily an infielder in high school, but has shown a willingness to catch too. Seems to kind of have the starter set to maybe develop as a catcher. More importantly, I would say there is some uncertainty there. Dude can really hit. Magnolia Heights High in Mississippi can really hit. I think at the very back of the first round, I think that this is a guy who is conceivably one of the better prep bats in this class. And so at pick 29, yeah, you go out and you send him out as a catcher, probably see if he can do that. And if not, you know that he's going to fall back to being a hitter who probably, again, is not going to be a zero defensively, but if he can catch, it really does add to his upside, I feel like.
And I like his hitting ability and power combination to the same degree as players in the past, like Tyler Soderstrom and Ralphie Velazquez, who were catchers, like primary catchers at the time they were drafted. And those picks still look pretty good even after moving. So I think like defensive questions here for me are less concerning because I think you are getting one of the better hit power combos in the class. Cole Prosek's season was awesome. And I'll also add, I hope this draft kills the notion that you can't draft high school hitters out of the state of Mississippi, because not only have we had a lot of really talented big leaguers from the state, but we also have Eric Booth Jr., who went with, what, the fourth pick overall in this draft and should be a top 10 pick. Like, let's kill that narrative and never talk about it again, please.
I will say, I think Connor Griffin is doing,
exactly,
doing great work there to kind of eliminate that as a concern. But, okay, pick 30, the final pick of, I'd say, like the traditional. I know we are in the supplemental first, but the top 30 picks of a draft is usually kind of the end of the, roughly the end of first round. We have 30 teams. Mark selects for the Royals Hunter Dietz, the Arkansas left-hander. Jacob, I'll go to you on this to explain, like, with Hunter Dietz, it's been a little bit up and down, but again, there is some real upside here, is there not?
Yeah, you're getting a starter's arsenal. It's a real five-pitch mix. The fastball has good shape to it. He is a very high-handed left-hander, which makes him a little bit unique. The velocity is real at present. He's up to 98. And again, like I said, I do think that you are drafting the pitch mix. As you said, though, JJ, I do think that there is risk here with Hunter Dietz. The strike throwing, I think, is questionable. He had only one pitch that he was in the zone with 50% of the time or more, which was his fastball. Everything else kind of trailed off from there. I think that the feel for spin is really good and could get better. The question is very much, though, how much are you going to be able to get him in and around the zone? And does that kind of high-handed, unique look allow itself to play as well as it did in college with the pro baseball? Does the fastball have as much life as it does with the pro baseball? Those are the questions that I have with Hunter Dietz. But in this range, I do think that this was one of the better picks.
We are through pick 30, but we're still not even halfway done with the total number of picks that we're going to pick. We'll be back again right after this quick break. And so now that we are in the 30s, we're going to do this a little differently. We can't be here for 3 hours. It's a Saturday as we're recording this. Got to let people do some stuff. So just 4th of July, actually, but hey. So we're going to go 5 picks at a time now. I'll read those off, and then we'll kind of just throw it open to thoughts that you guys have. So Ben at pick 31 for the D-backs takes Cade Townsend, the other Ole Miss right-hander like Taylor Rabe. Jacob at pick 32 for the Cardinals selects Ben Blair, the right-hander from Liberty, a Jacob Rudner fave. Carlos at pick 33 for the Rays takes Colbin Borthwick, right-hander from South Walton High in Santa Rosa Beach, Florida. Jeff at pick 34 for the Pirates selects, and he does list him as a two-way guy here, shortstop right-hander Archer Horn, San Francisco from St. Ignatius College Prep. And then at pick 35, I select for the Yankees Daniel Jackson, the Georgia catcher, your Golden Spikes Award winner this year. I'll start just by kicking off that, like, kind of like what you said with Justin LeBron at 27. If you get Daniel Jackson at pick 35, you can have questions about his defense. You can have some questions about his hitting, ultimate hitting upside, even with the great season he had. At pick 35, I feel like that those questions are well outweighed by the potential upside you're getting here. Carlos, what stands out to you from this group?
For me, this is at least the range where I start to get really excited about the high school profiles and the upside they provide relative to some of the real red flags that I have with a lot of the college profiles, including Daniel Jackson, who you picked. I think that we can linger on Daniel Jackson more if you want to, but no, I think I just think there's a little bit more hit risk there with Daniel Jackson than what his season might suggest. But Colbin Borthwick, this is a player who I'm still pretty surprised that we don't hear his name more in the top 20. I think his combination of power, he's been up to 99 miles per hour. He's tremendously physical. I don't think in a bad way, because he throws a ton of strikes. Like, I had some scouts talk to me this past week and say he's one of the better command high school pitchers they remember scouting, which is kind of shockingly impressive for a guy like him. He's got a power slider in the mid 80s. He's a unique athlete. He actually plays shortstop for his high school team, which maybe seems incredible for a 6'6", 250 pound player to play shortstop in any capacity. But I just think Colbin Borthwick's power, like his stuff and his pitching ability, I think is better than a number of the college arms that have already come off the board.
Jacob, I got to ask you about Ben Blair because you love
him. No, I actually think it's funny. I think that he's kind of the college version in this range of what Carlos just said about Borthwick, where it's like, I'm a little bit surprised that there's not a lot more conversation about him earlier in this draft. We're talking about an advanced strike thrower who's unique in the fact that he throws from a very low slingy slot. The fastball has some of the best shape in the class, in my opinion. There is feel to spin the baseball. There is feel to throw a changeup. There is obvious relief concern when it comes to some of these guys who are this like really low, almost sidearm slingshot type pitchers who are going to maybe have a hard time against lefties in pro ball. But generally speaking, when you get this kind of strike throwing ability, power, and just all around stuff, I think that it's pretty hard to resist once you get into the 30s.
Okay. Going on for our next five picks, we have Phillies, Mark Chiarelli selects for the Phillies at pick 36, Logan Schmidt, the left-hander from Pomona, California, high school left-hander. At pick 37, Ben selects for the Rockies, Bo Lowrance, third baseman from Greenville, South Carolina, another prep position player. The Rockies, pick 38, Jacob selects Connor Comeau, shortstop from Austin, Texas, Anderson High. Did I pronounce that right, Jake? Carlos, I see you kind of. You're muted.
Yeah, Connor Comeau.
Okay. And then at pick 39, Blue Jays, Carlos selects Blake Bryant, high school right-hander from Citizens Christian in Douglas, Georgia. And at pick 40 for the Dodgers, which, by the way, talk about, you know, it's the free agent rules and all that, but this pick 39 and 40 are first round picks, even though the Rockies' second round pick is at pick 38. But Jeff selects Aiden Robbins, the outfielder from Texas. This is a potpourri of different profiles. I'll just point out that Robbins, I feel like, is again a guy who there's some upside, there's some risk, but at the same time, again, if you're getting him, I would say there's been a lot of iterations this year, earlier in the year, where we've seen him going much higher than pick 40. But Carlos, what stands out to you?
My favorite pick in the draft happened in this range, and it wasn't even the one I made. It was the one Jacob made right in front of me, breaking my heart, taking a high school hitter who I love dearly. I think Connor Comeau has excellent pure hitting traits. I think there's a lot of projection with the frame. A little bit of a run on preps here between Schmidt, Lawrence, Comeau, and Bryant. It does seem to be like this is the range where people start to get excited about those profiles. But yeah, the Comeau pick stands out to me in this range.
What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, my Comeau pick was pretty good. My Comeau pick stands out to me. I knew that Carlos was going to be upset with that. Yeah. Talking about
I was hoping I could wait one more and get him at 30. At 39 was I picking, and I do think this is the range where kind of like knowing who your peers like is really valuable, because for me, like, I would have taken Coleman Borthwick, we talked about a second ago, a lot earlier had I known other people were more interested, and I thought I was like hedging my bets enough to still get Connor Comeau, but this is what happens when you try to game the other drafters. You can sometimes miss out on guys you really like.
Yeah. I also will say, just for the record on this, I do think that the Aiden Robbins pick is interesting just because the way that the stock on him has kind of ebbed and flowed over the course of the year. There was a period of time where it felt like he was a very sure bet to go in, let's say, the top 20-ish, maybe even as high as the top 15. I think there was a staff draft where that happened. And then now it seems like there's a question about whether or not he even gets into the first round. And I'm talking, you know, first round supplemental, all those types of picks. I do think that there's still a chance. But there are questions about whether or not he's going to play center field. I think that there are real hit tool questions there. And I think that any good evaluator is somebody whose opinion is going to change over the course of the year. And I'm happy to admit, like, mine has for sure. On Aiden Robbins, I started the year very high on him and was still there through about April. And then just as the year has gone on, he moved away from center field. The hit tool questions have really become a lot clearer. I think that this is an appropriate range for that level of risk, but I probably wouldn't take him much sooner than this.
So that gets us to five more picks we're going to roll out, which is 41 through 45. The White Sox. I picked for the White Sox here, their first pick of the second round. Cole Carlon, the left-hander from Arizona State. Mark selecting for the Nationals to pick 42. Brody Bumilla, the left-hander from Attleboro, Massachusetts, who you've probably heard about if you're this far into the pod and YouTube video. Pick 43 with the Twins. Kevin Roberts Jr., outfielder from Jackson Prep, another Mississippi high school bat. We're seeing a lot. We're seeing a run on those in this year's class. Pick 44, the Pirates. Jacob selects Jack Radel, the right-hander from Notre Dame. And then at pick 45 for the Angels, Carlos selects Landon Tomei, shortstop from prep shortstop from LaGrange Park, Illinois. And yes, that is the son of Jim Tomei. So it's a kind of a star-studded group here. Jacob, I'll let you start off this time.
Yeah, I actually
and correct like me by the way. Correct me on pronunciations if I get
say the two wrong. The two to mention here. I think it's Cole Carlone and then Jack Riddell. But
thank you. I got both of those wrong.
There you go. I actually was going to start with one of those. I actually liked your pick in this range of five. I think Cole Carlone has a lot of value at this point. I know the reason that he's here. It was because there was an end of season kind of arm thing that I think scared some people fairly. But we're talking about a left-handed pitcher who's up to 100 miles, over 100 miles per hour, with arguably the best off-speed pitch in this class in that slider. It's a no-doubt plus, if not double-plus pitch. And I think that there is, at this point in the draft, something to be said for taking the guy whose floor is pretty high. And I do think that in Cole Carlone, you are getting somebody who has the chance to be a very effective big-league reliever, at a minimum. And if it works out as a starter, I think you're in great shape. So I like that pick. I was hoping that he would sneak down a little bit further to me at 44. He did not, but I commend you because I think that it was the right time to get that guy off the board.
Yeah, for me, the first three picks in this range are definitely like high upside, high risk picks. I think it's interesting to note that Mark at this stage has now gone with Hunter Dietz, Logan Schmidt, and Brody Bumila in three straight picks. So he is clearly a fan of this high risk, high reward left-handed pitching demographic. Jack Riddell, I really like that pick as well. I think this is a guy who, if you wanted to make a case for him, in that like back of the 20s range, I really think you can. The more I dig into his profile, the more I like it. I feel like he is one of the more proven starters, great track record, well-rounded mix, throws a lot of strikes. So I like that one. And then I felt like I needed to get Landon Tomei here. Connor Como came off the board. There are a couple prep shortstops with great hitting traits that I really like. And Landon Tomei, I'm just really excited about his hit, his pure hitting ability, and just the pop that he has, despite not being the same size as his father. I don't think he'll have the same build, even if he does get a little bigger.
Five more picks coming up. So we have, let me hit copy. So we have Caden Sorrell, 46, pick 46, the Orioles. Caden Sorrell, Jeff picks Caden Sorrell, the outfitter from Texas A&M. I picks Carson Bowleman, left-hander from Simpsonville, South Carolina, prep left-hander for pick 47 to the A's. Pick 48 to the Braves. Mark selects Auburn second baseman Chris Rembert. Pick 49 for the Rays, Ben selects Chattanooga, Tennessee prep outfielder Noah Wilson. And then at pick 50, Jacob selects for the Cardinals, North Carolina Tar Heel outfielder Owen Hull. Okay, Carlos, you get first pick this time of what stands out to you of this group.
I think the Caden Sorrell value here for Jeff is really exciting. He's sliding because of some strikeout questions, but I think he actually has a pretty decent chance to stick in center field. It's a really enticing power speed combination. I actually like your pick, JJ, of Carson Bowman here. He didn't have the greatest spring, the spring that scouts were expecting, because the velocity was down primarily, but he still spins the baseball really effectively. He lands all those pitches. It's a high probability starter profile, and he dominated the competition despite the velocity not being where you want it to see. Nolan Wilson is a toolsy outfielder that I like as well. And then Jacob, again, taking a player that I was starting to consider in this range, and Owen Hull, who was another postseason riser. So I kind of like every pick in this range. They're all players that I would have personally considered with this next pick at 51.
Jacob, what about you?
I actually have nothing to add to that. I think that this group of five is really a very high value group of five. I think that my pick of Owen Hull jumps the line a little bit, but I don't think that that's a bad reflection of what could happen in the draft where somebody gets a little bit excited and wants to make sure that they get those tools into their system. Is he the 50th best player overall in the draft? Maybe not, but I think that you could certainly make the case. And the other one that I want to shout out is Mark's pick in specific, Chris Rembert. I think that Chris Rembert quietly has one of the better hit tools in this class. I think he plays a better second base than my much earlier pick in Jaron Advíncula. And I think that this is probably somebody who has a chance to grow into some decent, maybe not even average, but decent game power in a way that I'll even go back on my pick again. Jaron Advíncula probably does not. So really interesting second baseman out of Auburn. I think that Chris Rembert's pretty advanced, and it's kind of in a quiet way. So that may end up being one of the higher value picks of this range and certainly in this group of five.
Five more picks on the board here. So we have the Pirates. Carlos at pick 51 selects for them Texas catcher Carson Tinney. Pick 52 for the Marlins, Jeff selects Central Florida outfielder Andrew Williamson. Pick 53 for the D-backs, I select for the D-backs Virginia shortstop Eric Becker. Pick 54 for the Rangers, Mark selects Bellflower, California, St. John Bosco High shortstop James Clark. Pick 55, Ben selects for the Giants, Kingsburg, California High School right-hander Jensen Hirschkorn. I would say before we even get into commenting on the players, kind of to add to your comment, Carlos, I feel like that this is the part of the draft where you say, what is this draft strong in? It's these players who you kind of sit in this range of the 40s into the 50s, maybe in the late 30s, where it's like the separation between these players and the players you're taking 20 spots up doesn't feel that dramatic. I feel like that there's a lot of guys here who in different iterations or different parts of the year, yep. You know, you could make an argument for as first rounders. Maybe they didn't have as good a year or whatever, but you're feeling pretty good about a lot of these picks. I feel like if you end up,
I agree. I think Eric Becker, James Clark, and Jensen Hirschkorn all at various stages were viewed as potential first round picks, maybe especially those high school players at the back end range. For me here, Carson Tinney, I really debated two catchers, Carson Tinney and Jack Natilli here. I personally don't see a lot of separation between them and Daniel Jackson. And I struggle with Tinney because I want to let him slide on the board because there's a lot of hit risk here. He swings and misses a ton, but I am so enamored with the power. And if you see him connect and hit a ball into an upper deck of a big league field, like it is some of the best raw power in this class. So that was kind of my rationale for Tinney. I just couldn't hold back anymore on him.
Anything you want to add, Jacob?
I'm actually going to forfeit my opportunity to offer analysis here, and I'm going to throw it back to you. I'm going to play host for a second. Why don't you do for the audience a quick explanation on the great Eric Becker boogaloo that has happened over the course of our staff drafts?
So this is what I love about our staff drafts. I do think sometimes it allows us to kind of suss out what's kind of momentum before we're hearing it. We do a lot of reporting for this, especially the two of you guys do a lot of talking to scouts, coaches, evaluators, you know, all kind of agents, you know, everyone kind of involved in this. But in Eric Becker's case, I feel like that our staff draft kind of sussed out. Like when we would pick, every time we would pick, Eric Becker earlier in the year was rated much higher on our master plan, our overall draft rankings. Like he was much higher on this. And then every staff draft would roll around and we would just pass on him round pick after pick, and he would slide. And as the season went on, I feel like that we kept getting the feedback to push him down a little bit into more of this range. And really, I feel like that it was kind of the utility of a staff draft sometimes being that it does suss out that there are guys with profiles that are a little riskier or lacking in something where you kind of, you know, again, in Becker's case, I think your question is just how much impact are you getting here? Just kind of what is the overall, like, what are you going to see as a big leaguer down the road? And he kind of fits again. You get to the thing I love about this, though, the exercise is, and then you get to the point, we saw this with Justin LeBron. We've seen this with other guys where you get to a point and you're like, well, at this point, yeah, like I'm absolutely all in on that. So that's another interesting one that way. And I feel like we're going to have a couple more of those guys coming in this next group of five. And we've got Jacob selecting another one of his faves, I believe. Cincinnati catcher Jack Natilli goes to him. Pick 56 for the Royals. Pick 57 for the Astros. Carlos selects Jason DeCaro, North Carolina right-hander. And then it stays in the Tar Heel state because at pick 58 for the Reds, Jeff selects NC State outfielder Ty Head. I'm selecting for the Guardians at pick 59, and I take Canadian lefty Sean Duncan. And then at pick 60, Mark picking for the Padres selects Texas Tech outfielder Logan Hughes. I will make the note on Sean Duncan. He's having Tommy John surgery. There is a little bit of it works for the Guardians. The Guardians are a team that has had, they've had some failures and some successes of pitchers with injuries. We've seen this obviously this year. Now, Daniel Spino and Justin Campbell, their injuries came after they were drafted, but in both cases, long layoffs, came back, stuff is really good. They're getting real value again from Spino's already up in the big leagues. In the case of Duncan, I would say that the feedback we got after his injury was don't move him down much at all on the rankings because he's still really polished. He still really fits very much in this range. But Carlos, to kind of kick it to you, I feel like that we are seeing also here some real college performers going in this kind of 56 to 60 range.
Yeah, I like all the players in this range. I think they all fit here. They maybe are not the toolsiest players in the world, but they're well-rounded with performance and traits to really like, so don't have a ton to add here.
Jacob, anything on your end?
Yeah, I very genuinely wonder two things about this group of five. One is, where do most teams have Jack Natilli stacked up in their catching board? And some of the reporting that I've done, I have heard from teams that they think that he is the third best catcher in this class, behind obviously Von Lackey, Ryder Helfrich, and then him. I have a number of teams that I talk to that view him as a better prospect than Daniel Jackson and Carson Tinney. This is somebody who has searing exit velocities. It was a 96 mile per hour average, 108/90th in the regular season. He does make a lot of contact and good swing decisions, and so that is interesting. And then the other one is how high Ty Head will go. I know that there are teams that are worried about the passivity. They're worried about how often he's able to get to his A swing, but he is a no doubt center fielder, and he has an excellent feel to hit. It's one of the better bat to ball, guys in this class, in my opinion. I think that the hit tool will eventually be plus. And the question is really just whether or not how often you can get him to go and be aggressive and attack good pitches to hit. But I could see Ty Head and Jack Natilli, for that matter, going much better than we have them going in the staff draft.
We only have 15 picks to go. We'll be right back to wrap up those final 15 right after this. And we're back. Five more picks here. Ben, selecting for the Tigers, pick 61. Trey Rangel, the right-hander from the Colony High in Texas. Pick 62 for the Cubs. Jacob selects Taj Marchand, another South Carolina prep. It was a good class for South Carolina preps this year, from Charleston, South Carolina, shortstop. Carlos, selecting 63 for the Yankees, selects another Canadian prepster. We have Elliot Lachelles, goes here, a shortstop. 64, Phillies, Jeff selects Texas A&M first baseman Gavin Grahovec. And then at pick 65 for the Mariners, I'm picking, and I select, this is, again, another true two-way guy. I'm probably would send him out as a right-hander, but I think you could argue this either way, but that is Cole Koniger, the Keller, Texas High shortstop right-hander. Carlos, you kind of nodded your head there. Do you think he's more of a pitcher?
I think so. I think there are some hit questions. It would be really exciting to see him stick at shortstop because he's a plus runner. He's got some impact. I think he's a really good defender at shortstop, but I think ultimately the swing and miss questions probably will lead him to the mound. The other player I'll note here is Jacob taking Taj Marchand. This is insane value for Taj Marchand, just given where we expect him to go and the contact power contact power skills that he has. We could easily see him go in the 20 to 30 range in the actual draft. It does seem like some of us here at BA are maybe a little bit more skeptical just about how that swing works. I'll let Jacob comment on that if he wants, because that's his pick. And then Elliot Lachelles is a Canadian shortstop who I just really like the polished nature of his game, the well-rounded nature of his game. And he's performed well in some Woodbat Summer Leagues here leading up to the draft as well.
Jacob, if you talk about Marchand, but also give us a little bit of on Gavin Grahovec also.
Yeah, on Marchand, I think that I kind of got ahead of it a little bit earlier when I said what I said about Trevor Condon with the weird swing. I'm not going to be afraid of it. I think that this is somebody, like Carlos said, who does have insane value in the 60s. I had a feeling, this also speaks to Carlos's point earlier about just kind of knowing who you're drafting with. I had a feeling he would fall, and I just kind of let it kept happening. This was as much as I was comfortable letting it go, because I had a feeling if I waited any longer, I wouldn't get him. Gavin Grahovec, I actually think that this is a phenomenal pick. Especially because of what Grahovec showed towards the end of the year. In the beginning of the season, I think that there was a lack of confidence in whether or not he was going to be able to hit enough. It's a right first baseman. That's always a scary demographic to be dipping into. But the reality is that he came on late. He's a very strong hitter. The contact questions that I think were apparent earlier in the season faded a little bit in the second half and maybe eased some of the concern. But at this point in the mid-60s, I think that it's a really high value pick, even though he is in the right first base kind of contact question category. And then honestly, the pick that we haven't really discussed at all is Carlos. I think that that's a sneaky little pick here in the 60s with Lachelles.
Okay, rolling on to the end of the 60s. We have five more picks. We have Mark selecting for the Brewers at pick 66. Rocco Maniscalco, the Oxford, Alabama high school shortstop. At pick 67, Red Sox. I don't even need to tell you that this is a Ben Badler pick. Ben Badler is the the basically leading the charge of the Florida State first baseman Miles Bailey Believer Club. And then at pick 68 with the Cardinals, Jacob selects Texas Tech outfielder Caden Ferraro. We have at pick 69 for the Tigers, Indiana State outfielder Carter Beck. And then at pick 70 for the Reds, we have Georgia right-hander Joey Volchko. Carlos, I would say, like, Bailey obviously missed the second half of the year. I think he still led Florida State in home runs despite that. But that is a risk-reward pick. But What jumps out to you of this group of five?
I think this is a group of extremes, really. I mean, Miles Bailey has extreme raw power and extreme miss questions. Rocco Maniscalco has extreme athleticism and defensive ability, but real hit questions. I think Caden Ferraro has extremely impressive batted ball data and offensive ability and real defensive questions. And I think Joey Volchko has extremely talented arm and then very little feel for where it's going a lot of the ways. Maybe Carter Beck is the least extreme here, but he also doesn't have the most extensive track record. But yeah, this does feel like a kind of like pick your poison, shoot for the moon in one area, and then either hope the question mark area figures itself out or is irrelevant because the strength is so strong in this range.
I'll just note that I feel for Joey Volchko if the current trend goes for the Reds. The Reds have been taking actually a lot of kind of like SEC, productive SEC arms with kind of like these competitive balance picks. And then Ty Floyd and Hunter Holland and Luke Holman have all had real injury issues. So, like, you know, I don't wish that on Joey Volchko either. But Jacob, what jumps out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll actually just say I think that Carter Beck fits very cleanly in this group as well for Carlos, just because we're talking about an undersized, lower major college bat who's more of a data play. Like, those guys, to me, present a lot of risk just because the step up in competition is going to be enormous, and whether or not some of the foundational skills that we see on paper in the spreadsheet translate to pro ball are interesting. I also am not 100% convinced that he is a center fielder. I think that there is a probability that he ends up on a corner. But like Carlos said, this is kind of your super risk group. Maniscalco, great combine showing. I think that that was a little bit of the motivation there. It's kind of a combine watch pick. I think that Miles Bailey, the concerns are very obvious. If you can get to the power in games, it's gaudy. If you can't, you know, it's not. Ferraro, I will. That's been a long time cheese ball. That's gone from the unranked on the BA master plan to a potential top three rounds guy for me. I really am obsessed with him. But to Carlos's point, I jokingly put him in as hitter when we did the staff draft, because I am not convinced that he actually has a position. I do not think it's in the outfield. If he is going to play with a glove and not just be a full-time DH, I think it's at first base. But that being said, I think that of the players in this range, I do think that Caden Ferraro is the best and most proven hitter, which is why I went with him at that spot.
And then final five picks. We went through the end of the Cubs with the second round compensation pick. So we have at pick 71 for the Marlins, I select Wes Mendez, Florida State lefty. Two FSU players going in a five pick span here. 72 for the Cardinals, Mark selected catcher Will Brick, Christian Brothers High in Memphis, Tennessee. Pick 73 for the A's, Ben selects Grandview High School, Aurora, California, Colorado, I should say, right-hander Ethan Washman. Pick 74 for the Twins, Jacob selects South Carolina left-hander Jake McCoy. And pick 75 for the Cubs, Carlos selects outfielder slash first baseman from Hoover, Alabama High, Will Adams. Jacob, I'll start with you. I feel like we have a nice mixture of kind of like useful college lefties here and guys with a little bit more upside and also a little bit more risk.
Yeah, Will Brick potentially, unless you're going to look at Cole Prosek as a no doubt catcher. Will Brick, the best high school catcher for sure. In this class, I thought that was a good pick by Mark. Wes Mendez by you, good shapes, good pitchability. It questions out whether or not, you know, the upside is there to be a starter long term, or if it's going to end up being a bullpen situation pretty quickly. And then the one that I want to explain is actually my pick, because I think that there were a number of guys that I could have gone with that would have made more sense, or would have been more obvious is probably a better way to put it, at 74. But I did that mostly out of a motivation to do some reporting here on the podcast. I think that a team will have to either take Jake McCoy roughly in this range or pay a slot pay a bonus, excuse me, that is roughly the same as the slots in this range in order to steer Jake McCoy away from his Tennessee commitment. He is a transfer. He is committed to Tennessee. And I think that there is some motivation in his camp to potentially get to Tennessee if the value is not roughly in the seven-figure, you know, $1 million to $1.1 million range, and that's what this pick would be. I believe off the top of my head, the Twins at 74, it's like 1.1 something, 1.1 and change. And I do think that that's going to be roughly what it takes to get McCoy into pro ball. So kind of an interesting pick. Is it actually what I would have done 100% in that situation? Maybe not. But I do think from an intrigue standpoint that this is what it will take for a player who I actually do believe to be very good.
Carlos, what jumps out at you?
I really like your pick. I like what Wes Mendez here. I think there is a comfort and a polish and a proven nature to his game. I think he could easily fit at the early portions of the second round on draft day. So I think you've got good value here. I think we're starting to get into the range where there are really just a lot of questions with every player. And Wes Mendez sticks out to me as maybe having the fewest amount of questions in this range. And then for my pick, Will Adams, who we haven't touched on quite as much. I mostly use the rationale that Jacob talked about for his Caden Ferraro pick. This is simply the hitter who I was most convicted in, and we were really quickly running out of those offensive players who you feel conviction in. And even if he's a first baseman in the future or a corner outfielder, the pick was based on just more comfort level and the pure hitting ability and the pop that he's able to provide. So wanted to round it out with a bat that I felt good with.
So that is 75 picks. I know that that's a lot, but at the same time, it's not nearly what we're going to be talking about, not nearly what we're going to be analyzing for the actual MLB draft. We now have, I believe, reports on 11, let's say 10, you know, 1,000 players probably for this draft. There will only be 600 and some who will get picked. Many of those obviously will be high school guys who will go on to college, and you'll be hearing from a lot of those again. So we do, because we do have reports on the top 500 high school players. Not all those get picked. We also have senior signs that Jacob keeps building that list out. We have the top 500, which got reports for everyone as well. So much over at baseballamerica.com. If you enjoyed this, I promise you, you will enjoy what we have over there. Go check it out. Any other final thoughts before we wrap this up? We got this in under 90 minutes. Under 90 minutes to do 75 picks. Pretty well.
But it's a better pace than we'll see on draft day, that's for sure. But no, I'm ready to get this draft going. I'm ready to see what teams actually do. I hope you guys are prepared and have picked out some of your favorites along the way. It's been a long time coming. There's been a lot of work going into everything we're doing at Baseball America from guys like Jacob, from you, JJ, from Ben, from Jeff. So I'm just excited to finally get this show on the road.
Jacob, what about you?
When in doubt, draft a high school hitter. That's all I got.
Says our college writer.
Great summary. Yeah.
You know, but it is a good class for that. So for Carlos, for Jacob, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.